thinking, I will lay my troubles down by the water, where the river will never run dry. Hallelujah.
I'm gonna let myself be lifted. I'm gonna let myself be lifted. I'm gonna let myself be lifted.
By and by,
and by, I will lay my troubles down by the water, where the river will never run dry. It's been said, and I do believe, as you ask, so shall you receive. So take from me these troubles, bring me sweet release, where the river will never run dry. Hallelujah.
I'm gonna let myself be lifted.
Hallelujah. I'm gonna let myself be lifted.
Hallelujah.
I'm gonna let myself be lifted.
By and by,
by and by, I will lay my troubles down by the water, where the river will never run dry. There is a river in this heart of hearts, with a knowingness of my highest good. I am willing, I will do my part, where the river will never run dry.
Hallelujah.
I'm gonna let myself be lifted.
Hallelujah.
I'm gonna let myself be lifted.
Hallelujah.
I'm gonna let myself be lifted.
By and by,
by and by, I will lay my troubles down by the water, where the river will never run dry. Where the river will never run dry. This river will never run dry.
Mamus. Hallelujah, where the river will never run dry. And right here, our guest today here in the living room and Tonami's Holiday Camp, because Arnaldo is here too, is 5th District Supervisor in Sonoma County, Linda Hopkins, who lives by the river.
Mm. I do indeed, yes, in Forestville.
So tell us, what's that song mean to you?
Oh my gosh. You know, in some ways, actually, I feel like I was baptized sort of by the river when I got sworn into office, right? The day after my ceremonial swearing in, the Russian River hit the highest height that it had reached in a decade.
Yeah.
And I was literally just thrown into, you know, crisis management, which also I think gave a beautiful opportunity to see the community come together, to see county government play a really positive and proactive role, and also to really see the firsthand impacts of homelessness along the Russian River. So my first weekend in office helped to evacuate homeless residents from an area that was about to go underwater. The last gentleman, who was a veteran, we evacuated when the water was about a foot and a half below his tent. And so to me, the river is one of the most important resources in our county. And I'm only 7 months into this job. I'm already so tired of responding to anthropogenic problems in the river, where, you know, we have bacterial exceedances in Monte Rio, where we have cyanobacteria, which is toxic, especially to dogs and children. Those are people that are likely to ingest that. And so I really want to focus on how do we create healthy watersheds? And instead of constantly reacting, how can we be proactive,
right.
And create a set of goals and bring together all the different agencies that have some jurisdiction over the Russian River to really pull it together and set a goal of a healthy watershed. Of, you know, one of the sort of the Clean Water Act, you know, talks about swimmable, drinkable, fishable, right? Which is kind of a great goal for the Russian River, because it kind of embodies that, you know, okay, you need the healthy biological, you know, you need it to be clean and you want to be able to recreate in it as well.
Right.
And that's really, I think, my goals. for the Russian River. So yeah, we're working on, I don't know, I'm working on a bunch of nerdy projects on the Russian River.
Well, which let,
I
can well,
the
in.
The, so. Obviously the sewer thing is the big one, isn't it?
Huge. Yeah. Yeah. So yeah, we're working on the issue of TMDLs, which is sort of bureaucraties for total maximum daily load, which is bureaucraties for the fact that the Russian River has too much bacteria and too many sediment, too many sediments in it. And so the regional water board is basically coming down and saying, okay, this is a problem and this is how we're going to fix the problem. And so there are going to be, you know, required septic upgrades and enforcement coming down from the regional water board, which is a big deal to Lower River residents, because that's one of the last places that we have affordable housing in the county, and that's the costs true. Are going to be huge. Wow. So I've been really working on advocating for, you know, the property owners and seeing what can we do to get out ahead, try to find funding, that kind of thing. So, but it's going to be a multi-year process, and it's really terrifying for a lot of folks, especially if they're on fixed incomes.
Yeah, that's a tough.
And when you were campaigning, I know that environmental as well as socioeconomic issues were really at the forefront. Have there been issues since you were elected to office as 5th District Supervisor that have changed your opinion or enhanced your already deep commitment to all of those things, especially in the river area? I'm just wondering what kinds of surprises, what kinds of changes there have been since from campaign to elected official?
Yeah, you know, I would say that I haven't had any sort of dramatic policy position changes. But in terms of surprises, you know, one thing that has been a little surprising to me is how often data collection is not actually related or tied to policy development, which is really frustrating for me. I'm like, why is this happening over here? And then we're making decisions over here. And where's that connection between data and policy development? Sometimes it seems honestly like personality tends to drive policy more than data. And to me, that's not acceptable. So I keep hammering on data whenever I'm, you know, at a board of supervisor meeting. Okay, can we utilize, for instance, the homeless census to sort of show where we have hot spots of homelessness and then, you know, adjust funding accordingly. That's not how things have been happening. And so we're looking at actually a homeless services redesign where we could actually take a more data driven approach and actually bring together all of the cities and the county and all the different agencies that are working on homelessness under one roof, instead of right now we have a very scattershot approach.
Right.
And the problems are not going away.
No.
In a good economy, there's still so many homeless people here.
Absolutely. Yeah. And it's something, too, where I think we just need greater collaboration between cities and county and across jurisdictions. We've actually seen homelessness decline slightly overall in the county, and yet we're seeing a huge uptick in rural homelessness, which is very concerning to me. Huh. So up by about 20% in the Lower Russian River area. We're actually seeing up by about a third in East County, and a really dramatic increase in North County rural homelessness as well.
And if you look here in Sebastopol, which is not urban or suburban or rural, only one, it's a mix, right over by the Laguna, there is a series of RVs that people are living in, and it's not a crime to be without a home, but it is such a stark difference between the way it was in Sebastopol and now so many people on the street. And as you saw up close and personal in Guerneville, those contentious meetings, I want to get your take on those, Linda Hopkins, because I wonder, with the solutions that we're looking at, are we really dealing with the causes, the problems, and what are we going to do? We've got to get people off the street. They need showers. They need places to be safe and healthy. And when people are yelling at each other, not a lot can happen other than more contentious behavior. So take it away.
I completely agree. And I just want to say that what you're seeing in Sebastopol, we're actually also seeing in Grayton. I've received a number of emails from concerned constituents. And the trouble with, folks parked along the road or encamped along the river is there's no sanitation facilities, right?
Right.
And so it's not their fault that they're homeless. It's not a crime, but there is a direct environmental impact and a potential public health concern as well. Those are, I think, some of the other reasons. In addition to, obviously, this is a humanitarian concern and people should not be without a home, period, why we really need to wrap our arms around this problem. problem. I'm actually very proud to say that, you know, I was able to secure some additional funding to address homelessness in the Russian River area during budget hearings. And just on Wednesday, we convened our first meeting of a homeless task force where we asked representatives of every single community group in the Lower River area who's been engaged actively on the homelessness challenge to come to the table and to develop actually a set of guidelines and goals for how we're going to spend that money. So they put together kind of what we are going to be looking for in a request for information proposal, or RFI, that we're going to be sending out. And then they're going to be engaging with CDC staff to review the proposals that come in from local nonprofits.
And CDC?
Is Community Development Commission. Thank you. Sorry, sometimes I'm already starting to speak like a government person. I need to stop that. Cut that out. Too many acronyms. But yeah, so we're actually going to have this community-driven process of how we're going to allocate that funding. And it gives us an opportunity to take some risks, too, where we can try some innovative outside-of-the-box solutions as this sort of one-time funding opportunity to see what works. And then hopefully what works, you know, if we get some really robust programs that are really effective at getting folks off the street, we can replicate that into the future going forward.
So what's happening right now in Guerneville? Are there actions being taken to help the homeless population get some of their needs met?
Yes. So West County Community Services does have access to funding for rapid rehousing, which we're hopefully going to get folks off the street and into housing. And we're going to go after, you know, the most vulnerable residents, right, that we can see what we can do to kind of take that first wave. And then hopefully we're hoping to start the contracts for this new round of funding in January. And so then, you know, which of course is challenging because it's already going to be rainy before January. Right. For now, there's rapid rehousing. The shelter will be opening for the rainy season. And then hopefully starting January, we'll have a really 18-month period of just robust outreach and trying to get as many people into housing as possible.
Wow. So what do you think some of the misconceptions, let's go right to the top of the list, the misconception that many people have about the folks who do not have homes to go to at night?
I think that a lot of people think that it's only sort of males, sort of single males. You know, usually I think they think of like in their 40s or 50s, when in fact it's actually a very diverse group of people. We have a lot of seniors, we have a lot of veterans, we have children, we have families, we have women. And so it's not actually, you know, just a certain type of society. I think that also a lot of folks think they don't have jobs. That's simply not true.
Right.
I know folks who are homeless in the Russian River area who work one or two jobs. And, you know, and a lot of people also in the Russian River area who are at risk of homelessness, you know, who are one, you know, flipped home away from, and this happens all the time. Someone from out of the area comes in, pays cash for a house. Right. The long-term tenant is kicked out and it gets turned into a VRBO or just a second home. And we're seeing that. I was actually just out in Guerneville walking a neighborhood that now is actually majority vacation rentals or second homes. And so there's no longer that sense of community identity. There's no longer that sense of actually being a neighborhood. It's kind of more of a party hood. And so it's interesting that that's happening at the same time that we're struggling to address homelessness. And you kind of hope there might be some sort of overall strategy on that.
Amongst the supervisors, you know, when you talk about it, where are they coming from? On their side of things, the other supervisors?
With respect to homelessness in particular?
Yes.
I think everyone recognizes that it's a top priority. And we actually just had a fantastic, and again, it's going to sound sort of government-y, but we had a fantastic sort of workshop planning session on Tuesday about homelessness and about the fact that there's no countywide strategy, that we're all, I mean, there are literally a dozen different agencies involved, a half dozen different decision makers. No one is really talking to each other or strategizing long-term. And I was really impressed with my colleagues. Everyone was completely on board for, we need to reinvent this system. We need to have something more organized, easier for service providers to navigate, that's more of a human-centered design approach, so it's more accessible for actually the homeless residents. And it's not just one of us taking action and then the other ones, you know, sort of struggling to catch up. It's we're all on the same team working together to address this.
Transformation.
Now, exactly. Mm-hmm. Now, one thing is obviously what Santa Rosa did recently was basically criminalize homelessness. I'm hoping the county supervisors aren't looking at it in that way.
I'm very concerned, I will be honest, about the actions that were taken by Santa Rosa. And I've been actually reaching out to some homeless advocates who work in the Santa Rosa area. With the shutdown of Homeless Hill, there were 22 residents who did not seek services. And so where are those 22 people? Are they going to wind up in, you know, the Russian River area or the Springs or somewhere where there's, you know, basically the path of least resistance is often where people go to. And we don't have, you know, the police department out in Guerneville or, you know, people coming in and doing sweeps, because we only have a couple sheriff's deputies covering, you know, many, many square miles. And so I am concerned about that. And that's partly why I think if we had a countywide strategy where we're all partners and we're all, you know, going towards the same goals, that would be helpful. Because I am concerned that you're just kind of like, you know, squeezing the water balloon almost, where, you know, you squeeze in one area and it pops out in another area. And that's not a long-term strategy.
And we don't want it exploding. Right. I'm going to take a little musical break here with another tune from Lucy Kaplansky. And I know Lucy is somebody that's a big fan. And I'm actually going to play one of Linda Hopkins' suggested tunes, and it's Cry, Cry, Cry by Way of Sorrow. Lucy Kaplansky, it seems like it fits in right here. You're listening to Chaos Community Radio, by the way, and we are talking with Supervisor of the 5th District of Sonoma County, Linda Hopkins. Here comes some Lucy Kaplansky right now.
Taken by the wind, you have known the kiss of sorrow. Doors that would not take you in, outcast and a stranger. You have come my way of sorrow, you have come my way of tears, but you'll reach your destiny. Meant to find you all these years, meant to find you all these years. You have drunk a bitter wine with none to be your comfort. You who once were left behind will be welcome at love's table. You have come my way, oh sorrow. Have come my way of tears, but you reach your destiny. Meant to find you all these years, meant to find you all these joy has slept, will awake to days of laughter. Gone the tears that you have wept, you'll dance in freedom ever after. You have come by way of sorrow, you have come by way of tears, but you'll reach your destiny.
That was Lucy Kaplansky, Cry, Cry, Cry by Way of Sorrow, suggested by 5th District Supervisor Linda Hopkins, who is our most welcome guest here at Laura's Living Room, Cows Community Radio, with Arnaldo, who will be taking over the mic at about 7 o'clock if I let him. No, never a
it's
problem.
It's a battle.
Yeah. So, Linda, we've just talked about the situation of people without homes in Sonoma County, in your district, and that's one of the contentious issues. Gee, Do you think there are any other contentious issues around?
Potholes?
No. You know, let's talk about potholes for a second. Isn't it a relief to talk about potholes instead
Everyone can get behind that.
Yeah. Or get swallowed up by them.
Yeah.
What's going on with potholes?
You know, actually the board invested more money, I think, than ever before in roads this year. And so $20 million of general fund money. And part of that will be going to the storm damaged roads from the severe winter that we just had. But I'm really excited to continue with this pavement reservation program. And actually, in a few weeks, we'll have a sort of announcement of what roads are going to be repaved in the next two-year cycle. But I've been kind of going on Facebook and asking people what they thought and giving me the list of the worst roads in West County. And basically, the conclusion is that all roads in West County are the worst. They're just pretty bad out here. And so I'm working hard to see how many we can get repaved. And there were some good ones. We got some repaved. You know, River Road has gotten some good treatment
this year. You paved Joy Road. Somebody did something on Joy that's not swallowing cars up at the end.
Yes. Yeah. And that was, I think Joy Road was one where we had about 300 potholes in like a half mile, literally. I mean, no joke. That was actually the number of potholes that were filled.
I thought maybe you all were in cahoots with alignment shops for cars.
I know, right? Good place to invest. Put your stock in that.
All right. So there was that contentious issue. Let's go to another one. Arnaldo, what else is a contentious issue?
Well, obviously, you know, there's two big ones in terms of growing things, and that's pot and grapes. So can you give us an update on vineyards? What's been happening
with
the expansion?
A couple things I would say. One thing that I'm involved in is I'm actually the chair of the Santa Rosa GSA, which is Groundwater Sustainability Agency. So we're actually going to be tasked with ensuring that groundwater is managed sustainably in the entire Santa Rosa Basin. And it's a coalition of two supervisors. Actually, I represent technically the Water Agency, and Shirley Zane, my colleague on the board, represents the Board of Supervisors, and then one representative from actually every single city except for Sebastopol that's in the Santa Rosa Plain. Sebastopol opted not to join, but they will be on the advisory committee, luckily. And I stay in touch with UNA to sort of see how things are going. So we'll actually be able to look at sustainable groundwater management going forward and actually work with agricultural residents, rural residents, and municipalities to figure out how are we going to come together and make sure that we're not using more water than we are actually recharging into the ground. So that's a first for the state of California. It's pretty exciting. So that's one thing that we've been working on. And so that will obviously impact agriculture and winery development and all those kinds of things.
And so. I am in the background not getting you to shut up. I'm just going to be playing another local guy, Mr. December, and I'm playing another glass of wine behind you.
There we go. I love it.
Just so you can hear a little music while Supervisor Hopkins talks about what's going on with agriculture. So keep asking.
Well, that's it. You know, the finite amount of water we have, obviously, it's critical, and you know, obviously, there's not a lot of metering going on the plane either.
Right. And that is something that we will be having going forward is monitoring, which is essential to, you know, sustainable groundwater management. How do you know if you don't know what you're using, right? You can't actually ever look at sustainable groundwater management. Another thing that's going forward is the sort of winery events ordinance. And to be honest, I haven't been briefed on that as much. I've been really focusing so much on homelessness and Russian River TMDL things and other things
Wait,
that I need
TMDL.
To circle.
But,
right. Total maximum daily load. That's the bacteria and
just
sediment in the river.
The poop load.
Yes, the poop load, basically. It's actually perfect. Parenthood is very good training for being a supervisor. I actually spent a lot of time talking about poop, believe it or not. You know, it's the wastewater issues. So we try to, you know, sort of tone it up and don't say poop, but that's really what it boils down to. Yeah. I've been working with some residents on West Side Road. I've met a few times with Preserve Rural Sonoma County, you know, talking about some of their concerns. So I think that will be coming. I think it's still under development and probably coming around next year, I'm guessing, before the board.
And in terms of people getting involved, I know there are a lot of people in especially West Sonoma County, who are concerned about the tasting rooms and concerned about traffic, concerned about, especially on narrow roads, where some of these tasting rooms have been approved. And how have they gotten permits, and what can people do if this is having an impact on their area?
Yeah. One of the things that I think that we really have failed to look at so far are are cumulative impacts. And I think that it's also, it's not just winery events. It's also, you know, we have beer events out along the Russian River. There are bike events that shut down roads. And so how do you look at actually sort of staggering events so that they're not all happening at the same time? And I mean, because the traffic generated from some of those other non-wine events are just as significant,
they're
if
as
not
staggering
more.
As wine events.
Yeah. That's right. Is that yes. Yeah, no, they truly are. Yeah, you know, you look at like Russian River Beer Festival or some of the weekends that they have a jazz fest, those kinds of things. Also, you get wind up with traffic just bumper to bumper and then folks often inebriated, you know, driving on our not so easy to navigate roads.
And we know what's happening when people are driving, even when they're not impaired because they're not paying attention.
Right.
It's worse. Can you just give a brief how people can get in touch with you?
Absolutely.
And if they have questions or they have suggestions, I'm not saying complaints. I'm saying questions, concerns, and suggestions.
Go Absolutely. Ahead. Feel free to send me an email. It's lynda.hopkins, lynda.hopkins@sonoma-county.org. And I would love to get together. Just love to get out in the community, come meet you where you are and talk through concerns and ideas.
And she does this kind of stuff, folks. One of the things that I thought was very impressive during the campaign is Lynda liked to sit down with people who disagreed with her. Is that accurate?
Absolutely. I love nothing more than a robust conversation. And I have an open mind, so I always love to be, you know, convinced otherwise. Like, I'm always open to hearing your ideas. So
let's listen just to a couple more bars of another glass of wine. And Arnaldo, do you have another question?
Okay,
let's listen to just a moment here.
You have a seat, I'll pour you a glass of wine. So much is to be said, now that I'll agree. But whoa, baby, you can't fool me, nah, nah. I'm not the only one who's been living life and having lots of fun. So don't you point your finger at blame, cause babe, sure, shame on you for living in the past. Just have a look around, life is a blast. Take off your coat, put up your feet, spend some time and relax. Here's another glass of wine. Another glass of wine. Glass of wine. Another glass of wine.
And that's Mr. December from right here in West Sonoma County, another glass of wine. Back with Supervisor Lynda Hopkins and Arnaldo. And we are here in Laura's living room at Cowes Community Radio. Arnaldo, you got a question for Supervisor Hopkins.
Well, yeah, it's a big day in Sonoma County. We have a brand new rail system starting today.
It is so exciting. I was really thrilled. I got to go on one of those free rides a few weeks back. Took my kids. Yeah. Absolutely stunningly beautiful. And so lovely to be just blowing by the people who are stopped in traffic on the freeway. I mean, truly, this is just a smooth, beautiful experience. And it can get you to your destination faster during peak traffic hours.
If that's where you're going. I was on 101 coming north today. Fortunately, my car doesn't emit a lot of terrible stuff when it stopped, but we weren't going nowhere. Mm-hmm. And if only I could have gotten out and said, hello, smart train, but it doesn't go that many places yet. So may we be successful? Is that in the plan that it's going to keep going?
Yeah, I hope so. I was actually just talking to Gina Belforte, who is in Rohnert Park, city council member. I think actually she might be mayor. I should double check on that. And we were talking about the need to ultimately, how wonderful would it be to not just have north-south train in Sonoma County, but east-west. And she was also talking about some really exciting ferry possibilities as well, of looking at marine transit, sort of Petaluma area, 37. There's so many really exciting outside-of-the-box ways that we could approach transportation in Sonoma County, in addition to electrifying the fleet, right, to really look at a robust public transit system.
So where can we take the smart train from to right now? From the airport in Santa Rosa?
Yeah, from the airport down to Marin County. So I think San Rafael is where
it
stops.
I think that's where it is. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So you can actually be flying into SFO or Oakland and take BART or a bus into closer towns, and then the bus to San Rafael, and then get on, you know, if you got some time, that's the way to do it. I'm hoping that they're going to expand the service really soon.
Yeah. They're putting the money in place, aren't they?
Right. And one sort of exciting outside of the box, actually thinking that Gina Belforte mentioned, was how cool would it be if you had SMART, right? And then the ferry went right to the train station, and then you could take that ferry directly to SFO.
Yes.
How amazing would that be?
Yes.
You know, and that's the kind of thing where I think that, you know, this is our first shot across the bow of trying to get this kind of transit back in Sonoma County and in Marin, and that, you know, we need to keep going and advancing that so that there aren't so many connections. That's one of the biggest things. If you have to take five different forms of transportation to get from your house to the airport, you're not going to do it, because that's a lot of dragging of luggage, and, you know, and you can't really do it on a regular commute basis either. So
I'm going to take one moment from something that the FCC requests and even demands that we do. It is straight up 6 o'clock, and you are listening to KOWSLP. That is Cowes Community Radio. We're low power, high energy, free airways, no bull, all volunteer, 24/7. That's Cowes Community Radio at KOWS.FM and 92.5 on your radio receptor. Please check us out online at KOWS.FM, and you can donate. You can perhaps become a host. You can find out what our schedule is. You can do so many things. You can do cartwheels on the site and just let us know how much you appreciate having community-based airwaves so that we can have a conversation with our supervisor, with folks who represent us and are our voice. So it is now 6 o'clock, and I am going to start with a song, and Arnaldo is going to start after the song with a question for Supervisor Hopkins. Okay. And so it's Willie Nelson and Merle Haggard, and you know what's going to come after those names. It's all going to pot right here on your Cowes.
Think I'm dumb as a rock, reading me the news while I'm kicking off my shoes, and it's scaring me out of my socks. Admitted a stranger I'm not, but buddy, let me tell you what, if you ask old Will to say, here's the deal, friends, it's all going to pot.
Well, it's all going to pot, whether we like it or not. Best I can tell, the world's gone to hell, and we're all gonna miss it a lot.
All the whiskey in Lynchburg, Tennessee, just couldn't hit the spot. Got $100 bill, you can keep your pills, friend, it's all going to pot.
that pretty much sums it up. It's all going to pot. But locally speaking, Arnaldo, do you have anything you would like to add about the world going to pot in Sonoma County?
Things are moving in Sonoma County. Obviously, legalization, January the 1st, and there's been rules and regulations put into place. And from what I've been reading, it hasn't been globally accepted amongst the growers and things. Can you give us some background of what's happening there?
Very true. Well, we know there are around 5,000 cultivators in Sonoma County. To date, we have received...
And we're speaking of cannabis, folks, in case anybody doesn't know what this is.
Cannabis cultivators, yes, that's sort of code, right? Cannabis cultivators or cannabis growers. And we've actually only received a little bit over 30 applications for permits at the county. And the deadline is August 31st, which is obviously bearing down on us very quickly. So basically, we received sort of a trickle of applications when we were expecting an avalanche. And so we're looking at extending possibly the application period to give folks a longer time to come into compliance. The regulations, I mean, we set a really high bar. And so I think a lot of small-scale cannabis cultivators are really having a hard time meeting the standards and being able to afford the cost of the permits, which, you know, can be to the tune of $15,000, which is a lot of money.
That was the concern at the time, wasn't it, you know, for the small growers.
Yeah. And then in addition, I've had a lot of really heartbreaking conversations with folks who are currently cultivating on agricultural residential or rural residential parcels, both of which were banned by the Board of Supervisors in December. So I have some folks who are growing on, you know, maybe a 5-acre parcel, say that they have the support of their neighbors, that they've never had any problems, and they're looking for some pathway forward to legality, but there isn't a pathway for them. And so they're really frustrated. And I think that that kind of frustration has reverberated in the cannabis community beyond just the people who are growing on rural residential and ag residential into sort of a just general, well, we tried to work with government, then this happened, and now we're back to sort of living in the shadows and not
and
trusting
the
government. And
the feds are apparently not working with local authorities. At least in Mendocino.
Even the state came in, didn't they?
State,
that was a strange one.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of crazy. I don't think that there's ever been a situation before where, you know, you've got something that's permitted on a local and a state basis and still illegal on a national basis, and then the local and state regulations don't actually perfectly mesh either. So everyone's kind of telling them a slightly different story, and there's some redundancy and some, you know, overlap. So it's a tough place to be in if you're a small-scale cannabis cultivator.
And what I've heard from local residents, too, from a lot of people, they do not want people growing in their backyards. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's more than a NIMBY thing. It's people who are very concerned about growers, about the change in neighborhood, about potential for theft, for more traffic, for the smell, for whatever. And we're hearing more and more here in West County, people who say, no, I don't want anywhere near my property. Arnaldo, do you hear that also?
It's definitely seems to be permeating out that movement. Yeah,
yeah,
I would say so.
I agree that there are tremendous public safety concerns, largely because this is just a cash-based economy, right? And until you can actually invoice someone and pay with a credit card and, you know, behave the way that normal business people, there's always going to be risk, right? Because you have tremendous amounts of cash changing hands. And it's also a very highly portable, highly valuable commodity. So yeah, I think that it's very important to keep neighborhoods as neighborhoods. And yet there are some folks who are much more out in rural areas who are still prohibited just based on the sort of zoning designation, even on, you know, 5, 7, 8, 10 acre parcels. So.
Can the legislation be changed at all to kind of manipulate it a bit to help certain segments like that?
Yeah, I don't think there's an appetite on the board to really revisit the ordinance at this point, but we are, I'm on the member of the Cannabis Ad Hoc with Susan Gorin, and we are looking at the potential for instance spot zoning so that you would actually sort of have, you know, an inclusionary zone of a single property if you have the support of the surrounding community and it meets all of our minimum parcel size, minimum setback, measures to contain, you know, odor, public safety. I mean, we have a whole host of regulations to address exactly those concerns. So yeah, it's definitely something that we don't want to see as sort of, you know, taking over neighborhoods and hollowing out communities or bringing crime into areas where folks are living.
Tough balance.
Wow. So we had a couple of questions from listeners, one of which I thought was, and you already heard this off air, is what your priorities are for the district and the county overall. And what do you think the greatest assets of the 5th District are, and how do you intend to build on those assets?
Yeah, that's a great question. I wish I had actually taken a picture of my whiteboard in my office, because I think I have about 27 priorities listed, a bunch for the 5th and then a bunch countywide. But two of my top priorities for the 5th District, one is really addressing the issues of rural homelessness that have tremendous, you know, social and environmental impacts, as we discussed earlier. The second, which I think ties exactly into that question of what are our greatest assets in West County, it's absolutely our natural resources. We have the entire Sonoma County coastline. We have the beautiful, gorgeous stretch of the Lower Russian River. We have redwood forests. We have, I mean, it's just, we are so blessed out here. It's the truly, in my opinion, the most beautiful part of the county, hands down. And so I really want to build on those natural resources, and not build as in build buildings, but build as in protect more open space and open up more parks. And so I've been working really with regional parks, with the open space district, to see what opportunities there might be to increase public access in West County. Another thing that's actually consumed a tremendous amount of my time and is one of those things that I wake up and think about at 2 a.m. Is the issue of coastal access, because unfortunately beach fees are rearing their ugly head again, and we've been in conversation with state parks, who seems just hell-bent on charging fees along the Sonoma County coast. And to me, that's just anathema to everything that we stand for. For me, it's a black and white issue. I do not support fees, you know, being put in at the coast. It's a social justice issue.
Right.
You know, we have a lot of folks who can't afford to pay for that privilege. And, you know, well, then state parks as well, but we'll take, you know, we'll make low income passes. Well, look at our undocumented community. You know, in the wake of the Trump presidency, there is so much distrust of government from those folks. You think they're really going to come into a government office and give their personal private information in order to get a pass to be able to visit the beach? It's not going to happen.
No.
So that segment of society will not have access to the coastline. So I've been, working and reaching out to our partners, trying to, you know, implore state parks and find out if they're willing to consider other possible innovative collaborations or partnerships with the county, with our local nonprofits. So far, they haven't been very open, but I've been reaching out to our state elected officials to try and see if I can get an in to sort of meet with some of the decision makers to fight this issue. Because this, for me, it's just a fundamental, like, do not go there. That's not okay with me.
It is a big one. It's huge.
Yeah.
I'm going to do a tiny musical break with the Tea Sisters, and we're going to get back to wrap it up with Supervisor Linda Hopkins, and we'll have a few more questions for her about our county and about representing all the voices in this diverse place that we call home. But first, bring us back. That's the question that we're all asking. Linda Hopkins, can you just bring us back to sanity, please? Thank you.
Mother of all, huddle over us. We are a bundle, confused and disgruntled. Tell us of our moment, how it limps and sighs. Bring us back our eyes. Sing us from what's holy, we hear it whisper. Bring us back our story. Untangle fingers from our hair. We're tight and tired. Bring us back our prayer. We can't know what comes after if you won't tell us. Then bring us back our laughter.
All righty, those were the Tea Sisters, and it almost was another song, but we'll get to that in just a couple of minutes after we talk a little bit more with Supervisor Linda Hopkins, who has graciously said that she will stay for a few more minutes while Arnaldo and I try to not grill her too deeply. But
we'll pepper her.
Yes, we'll just make her nicely done. So
I'm starting to sound like a steak or something.
No. We have a steak in our county, and our county supervisor is here at Cowes Community Radio. And I hope this hasn't been too hard on you, you so far. Are you doing okay?
I love it. I feel like I love being peppered by you guys. I feel like really truly just feels like hanging out in a living room talking to friends.
And so, since you have a new electric vehicle, you're going to need a bumper sticker on it.
You're suggesting a cow's bumper sticker, I'm guessing.
Said the magic word. Either that or you can take Bossy or Bessie for the back seat. We have enough seat belts, I think. No, she says no. Arnaldo, you got a question for our supervisor, Linda Hopkins.
Well, yeah, it's leadership. Basically, after what happened this time last week in Charlottesville, we saw what is or isn't leadership and the abdication of it. You've had to, in very just a few short times, you've had to step forward, not just be a politician. You've had to comfort people whose children have died and have, you know, terrible losses. How has that been for you, having to step forward that way? Is it something you thought of even before the election?
It's not something I thought of, but, you know, at the end of the day, to me, it's just being human and being compassionate and relating to people on an individual, personal level. And that I think that that's what people are looking for in leadership, is a sense that you actually care. And I actually do care. And the scary thing is that I don't get that sense from our president, right? There isn't the sense of genuine compassion or concern. To me, the biggest thing that a leader should have is empathy and the ability to put yourself in someone else's shoes. That's not always possible. But to the greatest extent, you should try to see it from the other person's perspective. And I don't think that our current president has the capacity to do that. He doesn't think about the fact that he's lived an incredibly privileged life. He doesn't seem to bother to put himself in the shoes of someone who is absolutely terrified in the wake of Charlottesville, or of someone who, you know, is Jewish and had family, you know, members who died during the Holocaust. And the thought of seeing, you know, neo-Nazis walking down the street, it isn't just something that you see on TV. It's something that just strikes fear into your heart. Yeah. And the fact that he doesn't seem to be aware of that is slightly terrifying, to be perfectly honest. There's something inhuman or inhumane about it.
Literally, yeah.
So how can we approach that on a local level?
You know, I think it's by coming together as a community and standing up and saying that this is not acceptable. You know, and I think that's something especially that, quite frankly, white people really need to do. Because, you know, we have institutionalized racism even in this county. I mean, look at actually Roseland, right? Where the city of Santa Rosa drew lines essentially around sort of one of the, you know, majority Latino areas of the county and said, you're not part of the city. And so I think that being aware of that and standing up and saying, you know, this person does not speak for all of us, and we are with you. And for us, hatred is unacceptable. For us, white supremacy is unacceptable. And when did we start calling it like white nationalism? Or, I mean, you know, that glosses over it to me, you know? And so I think that it's just about taking a stand and not being afraid to, you know, say, whether it's on Facebook or in a letter to the editor, just say, this is wrong. There is no question. There is no room for that kind of, I won't use the word that I'm thinking of right now, in my community. So
hang on a second, because I got the perfect song to interrupt this conversation with, or maybe enhance it. It's listen to a little bit of Laura Love. We Shall Not Be Moved, right here on our cows.
Lower Russian River has been, you know, local complaints, county action, and then community outrage. That's a very unhealthy cycle to be in. And so, you know, the new sort of my new vision is that complaints will go nowhere, but partnership will lead to action, which will lead to collective impact. Yeah. And collective impact isn't just a touchy-feely phrase, which I know it sounds like that, but it really means, you know, bringing together local government, local nonprofits, and community organizations to all move in the same direction at the same time. Yeah. And rather than having the scattershot approach, suddenly you can actually make a much bigger impact, even using finite resources. And so, yeah, I really want to actually empower the communities to chart their own destiny. You know, we actually don't have any specific area plans, which I know is a geeky planning term, but for our different unincorporated communities in West County. There are specific area plans in other unincorporated communities, just not ours. Mm-hmm. And a specific area plan is kind of like a little mini general plan for that area where the community can come together and say, here is our vision. Our vision is to have affordable housing or to have mixed use, you know, sort of residential above commercial, or to get more transit, or to make sure that, you know, we have ample open space, or, you know, all of these different things that a community can come together and say, I want this. So I want to work with those communities, not to come in and impose my ideas. That's not my goal. My goal is to give life to what they want.
Empower them.
Empower them. Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that's what's wrong with government nationally, is that everyone feels so disempowered, disenfranchised, disgusted with what they see. And so, you know, and the way to change that paradigm is to empower the people. That scares some politicians because they fear that they might lose power. This isn't about power to me. This is about making communities better. And you can't just make communities better by saying that you're going to go do that and here's how. You do it by asking the communities what they want and then trying to work with them to fulfill that vision.
Well, now, a couple of years ago now, you first jumped into the political fray with the development of the Indian casino land, wasn't it? That was your catalyst. How is that particular fight going?
You know, actually, there's currently a bill that's making its way. It went through the House and is now in the Senate. So that's actually sort of moving forward. But you know what that experience taught me is that civility and respect and a collaborative attitude is what we all need more of. Mm. And so rather than coming at things as antagonists, if we relate to one another as human beings, and, you know, I always sort of go around assuming the best in people while always being prepared for, you know, the fact that I may be disappointed, you know, in some instances, but I would say that 9 times out of 10, if you sort of assume that someone is going to come at things in a positive way and your whole demeanor reflects that desire, that person is so much more likely to rise to the occasion and to sort of put service above self and think about the bigger picture. So that's kind of how I approach things. And that did prove true at our homeless task force meeting. And we had, you know, folks who were on polar opposite ends of the spectrum, did not agree with one another, but all came together in a spirit of civility and of proactivism and of really trying to get things done and make a difference. Hmm.
So what do you think? How are we, each of us, going to make a difference, Linda Hopkins?
I would say you need to show up. You know, and you need to show up not just when things are bad, when there's a controversial issue. You need to show up during budget hearings, during the kind of mundane governmental things where actually we're all sitting there waiting for folks to come, you know, behind the dais, the Board of Supervisors, to come forward with proactive ideas. I'm really excited that we're going to be undertaking the next general plan update, general plan being the document that guides the future of our county, says our values, and then translates that into land use policy. So that's a great opportunity to get engaged. And I would encourage everyone to come forward and say, what do you want our county to be in 20 years? Because it's a 20-year document. This is a big deal. This is the next generation of land use. Do you want more parks? Where do you want those parks? How do you want us to, you know, work with the open space district to spend their limited funds? What kinds of agriculture do you want to see? How do you want to foster, you know, small businesses? All of these kinds of things you can get at with the general plan. So show up. And I would also say the other thing that you can do, just wherever you go, promote civility. Because honestly, you look across the country and it's so depressing to see the total lack of civility. So even if you have someone who you totally disagree with, you know, maybe they are just at the far end of the political spectrum, talk it through, listen to them, hear them. You might have some common values, even if you don't have common approaches to how you know, implement those values. Because we have to start reaching out to the other side of the aisle. Yeah. That's, I mean, and at the end of the day, I'm actually one of the few elected officials, I think, who is a very liberal Democrat representing a majority rural constituency. And actually, that's something that Jim Wood and Mike McGuire have in common. I believe Mike McGuire, our state senator, is the only state senator who is a Democrat representing an entirely rural district.
Wow.
And so we, as Democrats, in my opinion, need to do a better job at reaching out to rural communities. So, and they have different needs.
Which is what we saw on the national level, wasn't it?
Exactly. Yeah. You hit the nail on the head. Yeah. Sometimes as Democrats, as liberals, we tend to be more sort of city-centric. And we need to think outside the box about those small communities who, you know, are feeling frustrated often from lack of representation, lack of attention. Cities tend to get more funding, have more infrastructure investments. So how do we reach out to those small towns? Their needs are very different. I was in Gualala just yesterday, and, you know, up there, folks are 2 hours, like 2 hour transport time to the nearest hospital through bumpy roads, you know, and so look at rural healthcare. You know, how can we support rural healthcare and you know, in empowering seniors to age in place? Those are the questions they're asking out there. So, and I, you know, I just want to support those efforts. And again, support that they've already got a great community initiative together, coming together to talk about continuum of care and how to prevent falls in the senior population, all kinds of really good things. And so, you know, at the end of the day, I'm just like, you tell me how I can help you. You're doing a great job. What can I do to further that initiative?
We look forward to a lot of that. There's a lot that we didn't talk about today that I really hope that we're going to follow up with. We haven't talked about the sheriff.
Oh, yeah.
The new sheriff that's happening, the change in policy that seems to be afoot now that may be good. I don't know. We need to talk more about justice.
Yes, absolutely.
And making this beautiful paradise we live in a place that all can enjoy.
Yeah.
And so I'm hoping, are you going to come back?
Absolutely. And if you're interested in the topic of the sheriff and sort of the implementation of the new policy surrounding ICE notifications, which is definitely good news, it is a step in the right direction. You can actually come. I'm having a meeting in Roseland on Monday night about immigration and would love to see you all there Monday at 6 p.m. At the Roseland Community Center over there. Yeah.
Well, perhaps we can find somebody from CALS to go and record it.
Yeah,
I'm not sure.
That would be good,
And anything else you can get us to do to be active residents, citizens, and constituents? Show up is what Linda Hopkins says, and that's what is it, something 90% of it in life.
Absolutely. Right. Just come. And if you have a concern, you know, bring it to my attention early. I love to be proactive on community concerns. Or if you have something that you're thinking about that maybe sounds like a crazy dream and could there be some resources somewhere, I'm always happy to look under couch cushions and under rocks to see if I can dig up a few spare pennies in the county's budget to support those kinds of initiatives.
And we want to thank, by the way, the county budget and our supervisor for supporting CALS Radio in more than just verbal ways. You have really helped us. You gave us a grant. You've shown up today. We're just so appreciative, Linda, of you being our supervisor and showing up.
Well, thank you for being the voice to the community and for doing this. I'm always inspired whenever I come here by the passionate radio hosts and the excellent taste in music, I would add.
And speaking of which, I love, Linda provides me segues that I could not have even asked her for. I'm going to play a brief set of some songs that Linda had said she would like to hear. One is for the Wailing Jennies, and that's one voice. And then I'm going to go with one of my favorites also from our local Kate Wolf, The Lilac and the Apple Tree. And then a new one to me from Joe Pancetta, that is Apake Waha. And so we're going to say thank you to Linda Hopkins for coming in, and hope you all have enjoyed this conversation with Linda, and we all look forward to welcoming you again to CALS Community Radio.
I look forward to it.
Great.
This is the sound.